The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Capella University is rethinking higher education. With their game-changing FlexPath format, you can earn your degree on your schedule, so you can fit education seamlessly into your life. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're at it.
This is the best day ever to do this show.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Let's get fucking cracking. Hey, producer, what is this, the Brady Bunch? Get the fuck out of here.
You don't like all the windows? Matt's coming in hot. Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. I hope everyone caught the last thing Matt said, which was, producer, get the fuck out of here.
We love our producer, though.
Of course we do.
I think does a great job.
He does.
And Safe, so you're joining us for the whole episode today, which is great. We love having you on. How you doing, Safe?
I'm doing great. I mean, what a day to be on the show, right? I mean, after such a historic event, I mean, I'm still kind of buzzing over that. I've seen so much MMA in my life. I didn't know I could be that wowed by an event, but man, Saturday was just really incredible, and it's just such an awesome show.
It is crazy. Oh, sorry, Matt. I said it is crazy that the first fight of the night is Davison Figueiredo against Cody Garbrandt. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a more stacked card than this one.
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was incredible. And, you know, the whole theme of having champs or ex-champs, and they all showed up. You know, those guys, they all know how to win in big moments. Yep. And, you know, obviously we know that because they were champions. And I think that was really a brilliant strategy. Brilliant or not, whatever. Sometimes shit never works. Everything worked on Saturday night. It was incredible. And I mean, just the fights were so entertaining and balanced. I mean, or if they were violent and quick, either one. I mean, you were so entertained.
Yeah,
it was very, very rarely does a card live up to the hype the way this one was. From the opening fight, like we talked about, with Figueiredo versus Cody, every fight delivered. And I want to talk about pretty much all the fights. I want to talk about one that stands out. I'm not just saying it because it's Aljo. It's, you know, one of my buddies. I thought that now that fight went the distance. Now, I don't know, man. I thought he fought brilliantly. Calvin Kattar, if you did not know Calvin Kattar, and you said Aljo's fighting some new guy who's got some hype or whatever he is, he's in the UFC for now, he's new in the UFC, you would go, all right, hey. And now listen, this is going to come out disrespectful, but hear me through. You would say this guy doesn't belong in there yet. You would say this Aljo is just outclassed.
Yeah, yeah.
This guy gets some work before he gets in the UFC. Now, we know that's not the case, but that's what it would look like. And you would say that he literally just was a different level. He implemented his game plan beautifully. He didn't get touched. But he dominated, and he struck him. I think
here's the truth, though. In a night full of, like Dana said, oh shit moments, you know, here's the oh shit moment for us. And I saw Aljo grappling with all these guys that are middleweights and 205ers and shit, and I've just seen him recently doing it a lot. You know, I'm in Vegas all the time. I see him at the PI. You know, he'll roll with guys that are way bigger than him, and he's so comfortable. Obviously, you know this, Matt. You raised him.
Yes.
But it just confirmed to me that he's strong as shit and he's so good at what he does and he can do it at 145 and do it. It seemed quite easily against a guy that's never been controlled ever like that. Calvin Kattar is really a tough guy. and has been around for some time, and he's never been dominated that way. You know, Holloway had him with strikes, but I've never seen him controlled like that. But what I would say is, man, it's just when you're so spoiled with so many unreal knockouts and athletes and finishes, I mean, that's just what happens, right? We're so spoiled. And people now, if they're not if they're not grappling or not coaches, maybe if they're not involved in the sport, we're looking at it from, you're looking at it as a coach, that's an A+, that's a shutout, baby. I mean, he didn't even get touched, right? I'm looking at it as, hey, if we got to fight Aljo, man, we cannot grapple him. We cannot. We're not going to beat him at 145 grappling. But fans are watching it going like, all right, you know. So I think that's where the disconnect is, really. That's how I see it. But it doesn't change the domination.
Right. No, 100%. If the card was full of stale fights, that, you know, it could actually, people might actually like the fight, but the card was, there's so many beautifully, the jiu-jitsu, the knockouts. I mean, it was a great night for jiu-jitsu also. I mean, oh my goodness, the submissions. And I let's start getting into the fights. We saw, but Aljo's fight, I just wanted to say that a lot of questions were answered about
true.
If he could hang in that division.
100%.
It's not like he pulled something out from, you know, no. We didn't see that. Calvin Kattar knew, everybody knows what Aljo wants to do. The fact that he could still do it.
Yeah, that's just it.
Implement it. And then, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to watch somebody, and he has a different style than Merab to do it, but Merab's also another case of this, of the MMA, closing the distance, the closing the gap. And that alone is just a beautiful thing to watch. And then the execution of the
game, right.
The control once it gets to the floor.
But you know, the credit, but you touched on something there because everybody knows about the grappling. But he outstruck him because he'll smack you around if you stay at space with him, Aljo. He'll smack you around with those hooks. He'll use those front kicks to penetrate. And he did a good job of penetrating and getting close. And really winning the striking battle too. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, he called out Ortega. Yeah. He's trying to stake his claim.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, man. I think that he shows, hey, I can play this game at 145 with the top 5 to 7 guys right now. And he proved that. And I mean, and we'll see what happens from there.
It was a respectful call out too. You know, he's like, look, me and Brian and I are just going for the same thing. It wasn't like, hey, throw Brian in there and I'll strangle him. It was a respectful and a smart call out, and it's a fight everybody would love to see. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned like the fact that it was almost the embarrassment of riches how good the card was. Like, you know, like you want to see, like, Bobby Green had an incredible fight. Diego Lopez, there was so many great performances. Incredible. That you're like, fuck, that didn't get any recognition. That didn't get any recognition. It was, So it was. I think that's a reason too. Was that there was so many incredible moments. I mean, Bo Nickel dragged into the second round for the first time. I mean, unbelievable.
It's funny that he was upset with the performance. Where
it was, it was.
Know, I mean, why? I mean, that just shows. I disagree when people are like, yeah, but he's cocky. I don't agree. I think he's very confident that he's going to be one of the greats. It's a different kind of, it's not him going, these 100%. Guys, I'm this and I'm that.
Yeah.
He's basically saying, yeah, I get it. You know, people are complaining about being on the card, but when you see what I'm going to accomplish, it's going to make a lot of sense when you look back at this. Like, you know, basically what he's saying, you know?
But think about this. And this is the truth, right? And I think you hit on it. Listen to what he said after the fight. He goes, guys, I'm only 6-0, right? I'm learning out here. He's like, you know, these guys have 20 fights. So he obviously knows and understands, you know, the experience gap that he has. But I think that, you know, as far as the fight goes, he performed well. He dominated the fight for the most part. It is the first time he's went into the second round. And he spoke on all those things. So he wasn't calling out Khamzat and those guys that he has been calling out after the fight, because I think he's got a good gauge of his hype meter, and he didn't live up to his own hype. And so he's a guy that knows how to win, man. You know, Bo Nickel has won so much in his life. He's going to calibrate from that fight.
I like the way that Cody fought him. I think Cody was taking chances. He was fighting very, like, almost with a guy like nothing to lose. And I like that.
Yep.
That's what made him dangerous. That's going to make him dangerous than guys that are better that are afraid to pull the trigger. He was pulling the trigger.
Yeah, and he was.
So, you got to give him some props for that. Cody's like, listen, man, this, you know, he didn't care what it looked like on paper. He was going to,
you're right.
He was going to go for it. And he did. So he,
and he made, made Bo uncomfortable. He made Bo uncomfortable. He shuck him off on that one takedown, fucking just shuck him right off and put him right back in space. I think that he could have been maybe a little bit more careful with his distance, but he just didn't give a shit. I mean, that was his mindset. And you're right. You got to respect that.
There's one thing I seen all night long, and I was pointing it out to my daughter, my oldest. I'm like, look when someone's mounted. Look when someone's on their back. Look at the hips. Look how their legs are not moving.
Yeah, they're flat.
What is going on? I go, what is happening? They're not going to get out. You cannot just expect to explode or think that you're wrestling. And I want to talk about the Figueroa versus Cody Garbrandt. You can't just assume because, look, man, I'm a sprawling brawl. I can beat you in wrestling that you're not going to be on your back. You can get there with a slip, a punch. A guy could out-wrestle. Anything could happen. You get reversed on top. When you end up mounted, it's a position you've had to have escaped not dozens, hundreds, to the point to thousands of times in practice. It's the only way it's going to work.
You're right. And you heard it's
not moving.
You heard DC saying you got to work with the legs, right? And and then you look at Oliveira and his amazing guard work, his ability with the butterflies, how he elevates. He had Armand elevated on those sweeps, right? And Armand is, you remember that spot, right? Where, you know, we're fighting for that battle. Who's going to get turned over? And you see what, you know, an effective guard does. And obviously Oliveira has probably, you know, one of the best guards in the game. But yeah, there was a lot of guys mounted and they just laid there flat, like their lower body. I call that your lower body's dead. I'm like, hey, your lower body's dead right now. You got to activate. Everything has to work together, right? From my head to my toes. I've got to shrimp. I got to move my shoulders, my hips, my feet, everything.
Is there a reason? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So I apologize. No, is there a reason in MMA as opposed to jiu-jitsu that they're doing it different? Or would they tell you, no, that's because in MMA I have to worry about this? Or is it they're just doing it wrong?
Tired. Tired and taking a break. You know, Matt knows this too. I mean, you know this too. I mean, you train, Jim. I mean, you shrimp, right? I mean, it's one of the first things you do. You shrimp all the way down the mat. You shrimp all the way back up the mat. You always hear, I'm sure, Matt, we go to Matt's jiu-jitsu class, which we both need to one day and learn from the great Matt Serra. You hear about, you can never be flat on your back. You need to be on your side. You've got to create an angle. And I mean, we saw guys that were just flat on their back and fighting all upper body, right? Just kind of grabbing posture and trying to control posture. But you can control posture, but you're not going to escape. You're going to stay stuck if you're flat.
Yeah. When you're mounted, to talk about that a little bit deeper, it's funny because I taught the 7 a.m. and the noon. I did mount all morning. So it's where my brain's fired up about it. When you're mounted, let's say I'm on bottom and a guy's 300 pounds chest to chest. Okay. Now, yes, we don't want to be flat with our shoulders, right? But now for me to get my shoulders off the mat, it's almost impossible. But your lower body, and you said it earlier, dead from the waist down.
Dead from the waist.
When you're mounted, if I get my elbows in and my lower body straightens and I start getting a leg flat to the floor between them, you use your feet like you have another pair of hands.
Yeah.
When you look for somebody that, so it's very hard to stabilize, where it's easy to get one foot underneath, capture it, and then capture a leg. So it's hard for them to stay mounted. Once you don't see anything happening from that lower body, somebody can be totally flat on me, my shoulders flat. My lower body can still turn, my knee, one leg flat, totally, 3 o'clock. I could do that no matter how heavy they are up top.
Yeah, you're right. You can't. The truth is, nobody's on your legs, right? Your fucking legs are free, right? The mount, they're on your, up your, over your navel, over your chest. Your legs, there's literally nobody on them. So you can turn and move your legs at any time. So, I mean, I think it really speaks to more fatigue and more what you said, you know, sprawl and brawl. Guys are maybe not doing the technical stuff. And you don't see as much ground control. But, you know, we saw it with Oliveira. Oliveira's jiu-jitsu. Armand and Oliveira was a grappling masterpiece, as I'm sure you'd enjoyed that very much. I mean, there was a lot of great technical stuff going on.
I love that fight. I want to talk about it in detail. I thought, because the decision, people, I want to talk about that. Getting back to that bad positioning, Cody Garbrandt, okay? I don't want to keep harping on it because I love Cody. If you look the way Figueroa kept position, it was a game of catch-up. You know what I mean? Like he couldn't catch up to him. He's leaving. You're exchanging one bad position. He's also, by the time you're getting out of one position, he's on the other one. When you're dead tired And then we used to do this a lot. I still do it. I do it a ton. I'm doing it with my oldest, I should say, getting ready for a match. When they're dead tired, that's when you put somebody on their back. That's when Cody Garbutt's not going to be explosive. Even when you're belly down, flattened out, look at the lower body. All the legs is one trying to split to get one leg to the floor where you can start to face him. If it's not, you're not getting out. I knew Cody wasn't getting out of mount. I didn't have to be a genius to know it. I'm like, look at his, he's not getting out. That's not happening unless this round ends. So,
and Figueredo is so strong. You know, when Brandon fought Figueredo and I cornered him for that fight and I helped him get ready for that fight in that camp, our whole thing was you got to win every scramble because Figueredo, he'll go. But if you beat him in the scramble, he kind of takes a break. And Brandon, they had crazy scrambles. You remember that fight when they swept each other? And Brandon would always end up on top and always win, and then Figueredo would settle. And Brandon really neutralized him, and that was at 125, right, where, you know, he was way bigger than Brandon. So I think that you make the mistake, too, of losing the scramble, right? Let's not even get in that spot. Let's go. We never settle in a bad position, right? We don't accept it. If we do get there, we take a second, and then we've got to work the escape. Like you said, I mean, you cannot rest flat dead legs on your back. You just can't. You're going to get elbow to your face, or you're going to get arm triangle, something bad's going to happen.
100%. Are they, when guys are doing that, are obviously you said they're relaxing or they're tired. Are they hoping that they can just catch their wind and explode out? Is that what the thinking is when you're there?
Yeah, I think it just depends. You know, if you got Matt Serra on you, you know, who's a black belt. And by the way, do you see all the Matt Serra highlights there on that 300? Boy, I bet you Matt was at home. So I saw there was about three. They gave him a lot of love on that. I thought that was nice. If you're fighting a grappler, you don't want to lay on your fucking back. Now, if I'm fighting a guy who's not a grappler and he's on top and I'm like, this guy's not going to pass my guard. Or even in the mount, I'm like, he's not going to arm triangle me. I'll control posture. I'm not taking any damage. I might take a break for 5 or 10 seconds, but I don't know any rule book that doesn't say the mount is a terrible spot for the opponent, right? I mean, you're losing the fight. So you can't rest in a bad spot. So when you see someone kind of die down in a bad spot and rest, they're losing the fight and they're either A, getting their will broken a little bit, or B, they're, you know, they're making a concerted effort to recharge a battery. But you get stuck there, you might not escape. And we saw that. So you cannot rest in a bad position. That's like rule 101.
The Armin fight and Oliveira, what were your thoughts on that, guys? I mean,
amazing.
Who came closest to ending it? You have to look that way. You could look at it like that. I mean, Oliveira got some close. But, you know, you could also look at Armin persevering and getting out of those positions and then dominating.
So, what was it? Was it a guillotine that he almost got caught? What did he almost get caught with? Guillotine. I think the round ended,
The guillotine. In the first. Well, no, I had a darce at the end, but I don't know how tight that was. But the guillotine was tight in the first round.
Oh, like the darce at the end of the third,
But the darce at the end of the third, I don't know how tight that was. He looks fine. And, I mean, you know, you go flat, but, you know, Matt knows this. That's a freaking defense is to try to go north-south and go flat. But the guillotine, I mean, Oliveira got his good try. He got it in deep. He sunk it. He got his legs completely attached and he was cranking and it was tight. And I thought, and then when he reversed to the mount, I mean, it was pretty good. I thought Armin showed, you know, his grappling chops. He's probably one of the only guys that can grapple with Islam. And if you watch the first fight, it's actually a pretty damn good fight. I did it on UFC Breakdown and Armin fought a really good fight, had some good scrambles with Islam. I think Islam will actually gain more confidence from watching Armin against Oliveira for that long period of time. Armin did play the guard a little bit, you know, and he did great with the elbows and stuff like that. And it won him the fight. He's not going to be able to keep Islam on his back. You know, I mean, that ain't happening no matter what. So he's going to have to strike with him. But that's what I thought Armin shined. He did good. In the, he landed some good jabs at distance. He was really calm and calculated. And Oliveira, you know, he's got knockout power. He did it to Gaethje. He's done it to many guys. You know, he's not a guy you stand in front of and think, oh, he's a grappler. He'll knock you out. And Armin managed the fight very well. And I thought it was very close, but he was winning the third pretty much the whole time. I could see why it was a split for him.
I thought Armin won. And, I'm a jiu-jitsu guy, you know? So I thought he did enough to dominate and he had the fight where he wanted it more.
I thought it
was pretty clear cut, but like, you know, again, Charles is fun. You know what I mean?
He is, man. He's great.
Speaking of fun, and I owe an apology. This person is awesome. I am super excited about Kayla Harrison. How about this?
True, true.
Two words. My bad. I did not realize, Jimmy.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Did you say something about her beforehand? Because I'm unaware.
We both picked Holly. Am I right?
I picked Holly. I like the way Holly deals with grapplers. She has good footwork. I mean, if you look at what she fought Ronda, she wasn't there for Ronda to grab. I mean, the way that Kayla walked her down, used her straps to set up the clinch, even though she got reversed, she kept the composure, got back up, got the takedown. It was just, I love when someone uses, I'm not going to say unconventional because judo throws aren't very, but in MMA, we use these beautiful throws. It was awesome because you know what she wants. You know she wants to throw you. You know she's expert at throwing people because she's a judo champion. But she's still throwing you. It was so awesome. And how about this? I've seen her fight before. This is something I didn't realize because I wasn't too familiar with the organization. Her former, where she fought, she...
the elbows.
She wasn't there was no elbows allowed. Yeah. So I wasn't too impressed. Her elbows are vicious. And then she uses the elbows to get back to her ground game of passing and getting a dominant position and working someone over. Her elbows are punishing. They're violent. And, you know, that. And on top of that, Ray Longo said he talked to her and she's
a sweetheart.
I want her on the show. I heard she's a sweetheart.
She's a sweetheart. Funny. Yeah, that's
funny. She's got a great personality. So I want her. Jake the producer, please, let's get her on soon. Because I'm just super impressed with her, and I can't wait to see who she fights next. It's a breath of fresh air.
True. Always, I mean, I thought you know, you look at the Larissa Pacheco fight, right? She kind of got pieced up. She didn't look comfortable. Man, she looked so comfortable on the feet. And I think Holly made a mistake in engaging in the clinch and re-engaging in the clinch early. I don't know why Holly re-engaged in the clinch and tried to take her down. It was almost like she wanted to prove a point. It was obvious that Kayla was physically stronger. And we've seen Holly, you know, have a cage game and a fence game and do well at getting girls down, but not against Kayla, a judo champion nonetheless, not even wrestling. We're talking a judo champion. So you're trying to, you know, get that base on the hips. You're not going to do that. And Kayla looks so strong in every position. But here's the part that impressed me. You're right about the closeness, the ground and pound, the power in those ground and pound shots, man. The viciousness, you're right, the elbows, the ground and pound, it was vicious. The speed, and she looked very experienced. She never looked uncomfortable, not even for a second. And man, once she got going, I mean, it was done. So, you know, I think there's some fights for her in division still. I think she should fight another fight or two before she does fight for the title. I think there's a lot of girls, you know, Macy Chasson, and I'm not just saying that because she's my girl. I think Macy had a great fight in her last fight against Panny. There's a couple girls there that are still pretty dangerous, and I think are dangerous on the feet, dangerous on the ground, that I would like to see Kayla fight before she fights for the title. And I'm not saying she couldn't beat Raquel. I just don't like seeing people come in, fight one fight, and then fight for the belt, you know, when you got people in the rankings.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Guys, what about Yuri Prochazka, man, versus Rachik?
Alexander Rachik, yeah.
Unreal. Listen, man, props to Rachik, because if he was fighting a normal human being, he probably would have finished it and took the guy out, because technically he was being crisp. He was timing on his shots, the power on him.
2 years off, by the way, too. He hadn't fought in 2 years, so yeah, he looked really good. Yeah, he looked really good. Did.
What it looked like? It looked like a matter of time. And then next thing you know, the Zen master, I mean, geez, he's just he doesn't mind, listen, to hurt somebody, you know, you got to be there to get hurt. And he doesn't mind being right in the midst of it.
Right there with his chin, straight in the platter, right in the air, like
asking you to hit him.
Here's the thing. And I listened to him talk, you know, they asked me, you know, he was standing in the parking lot and shit beforehand, and they videoed him and they were telling him, hey, you know, you were alone in the parking lot at midnight, you know, last night. So it's part of my ritual. And he said, I prepare myself mentally, right? And what I feel like we saw was he, as long as he didn't fall down, was like, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to knock you out. He just kept pursuing him, right? And there was nowhere for him to go. And even though he got outperformed almost in every metric, really, with the striking. I mean, Brassage was kicking his leg. And it was hitting the leg kick again that we saw with Pereira. They obviously studied the tape. He was piecing him up with clean shots. He wasn't getting hit. You're right. It looked like it was a matter of time. He was just going to get buzzed and one too many. But it was like he powered himself up almost to this point where he was not going to be denied, and he just willed it to happen. And that guy's something, man, because if he doesn't get knocked out, that's what's happening. I mean, he was doing that against Pereira, if you remember. He started to push Pereira back with those 1-2s, and then he got clipped and taken out. So,
And he wants a rematch, obviously. I think it was the second round he lost to Alex. But I think you might have to do more than one fight before you get the rematch. I mean, he might need one more before they give him a rematch. Not that Rakic wasn't an exciting fight, but I don't know if you go only into the second and then get the automatic rematch. I don't know. Well, I had a question for you guys too, as coaches. What do you think Jalen Turner was thinking when he dropped Moicano? And that did he think that was a highlight reel walk off home run type of knockout? Because then he even gestured to the referee, which is what I really didn't get. Like, what was he gesturing?
I thought at first when I saw this, the coach in me got so pissed. I was like, dude, if this was my guy, I would be so fucking irate that you were trying to be cool. Then I thought about it. And then when I thought what Bobby Green said about the stoppage before, right? Jalen Turner was the one hitting Bobby Green over and over again. And Bobby Green, you know, this was obviously has a lot of controversy. Maybe he was saying, hey, fucking the fight's done. I'm not hitting this guy extra. Maybe that was playing a factor in his mind that he didn't want to do any more. But no matter what, Moicano sat down and was looking right at him. It wasn't like he face planted him. So I don't know, man. You know, you never know what someone's thinking. But to lose a fight like that after you had a chance to win, I'm sure the coaches were really, really disappointed.
Do you think, because he did pop right up, like you're right, like Moicano didn't look like he was not down for, and he didn't look down or vulnerable at all. If he had followed him to the floor, could that have been a problem for him? Like, I know that he shouldn't have done that, but I thought Jalen Turner, if he follows Moicano to the floor, it might have been a problem that way anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, when you get buzzed, you know, and you get hit and you get a flash, you get knocked out by the second punch, right? Sean Strickland got dropped by Alex Pereira on the hook, and he got up. And when he got up, he got hit with the right hand, remember? And the right hand is what actually knocked him out. So look at Alex Pereira versus Jamal Hill. I mean, he dropped him with that hook, but Jamal Hill was still in, right? And then those hammer fists is what put him out. So when you're buzzed like that and you get hit with the second and third shot, that's when you actually go out because your defenses are down. Think of it as like your shields are really, really low.
Okay, yeah.
And so we don't know. He could have jumped in there and popped him with an elbow or hit him with a couple shots and turn the lights off. We know he heard him and we know he sat him down. So I don't know, Matt, what do you think?
I want to touch on that in one second, but it reminds me what we're talking about is Zhang Wei Li when she fought Yan, when she strangled her unconscious.
Yeah.
Now, if you watch it, she like pushes her off. That might have woke her up enough to get her up. If she would have, now listen, hindsight.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
true. He might have just said this and allows her not to move, touch her.
Yeah.
Let her snore for a second. And then
that's true.
He's not standing up. She can't answer. Fight's over. But hindsight's 20/20. She didn't realize she could offer. Watch it. I believe she might have woken up.
She kind of pushed her. Yeah.
She helped her up, but doesn't matter. She won anyway, but hell of a fight. But back to the Moicano fight. There's times like we're talking about, I believe he hesitated almost as if fight's over. Hey, you should stop it. And it cost him. That's what I don't know. Maybe I'm off, you know?
No, I mean,
There's other times where guys are afraid to follow the jiu-jitsu guy down. Maybe that was in the game plan, but if not, get him up, get on him. It wasn't that. It was, I'm thinking this is over. That's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, call him up right away so you can hit him again. Don't just walk away.
100%. You know, my second fight in the UFC, just only because of experience here, Eve Edwards, I paid the price of, he switches back and forth. When he switched to southpaw, I wasn't that conditioned on closing the distance as well. So I went to clinch without striking first. He timed an uppercut that dropped me. And then he jumped on me when I still had the birds around. And I went to just grab him. He was so scared of my jiu-jitsu back then. Well, I'm assuming he was, because he jumped the fuck off me. I got up, and then he went to come after me. I threw a high kick, expended more energy. The round ended. I literally was on the stool, like, getting my wits back. So, I mean, if he would have followed me down and elbowed me twice, I probably would have been out of the UFC. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It is a wild, it's a wild thing. Sometimes the game plan's in your head. Don't go to the floor with him. Sprawl and brawl. Don't follow him down. You know, but I didn't see that. I saw him be like almost do a walk.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't ever like to say what, you know, we don't know, right? Obviously, we don't know. But yeah, you have to ask him. But I mean, you know, he's the one feeling like the worst about it this morning. I guarantee you that.
100%. Yeah. All I got to say is, I mean, guys, I'm not saying this because I picked him. Max Holloway. I mean, what? I mean, dude, are they building a statue of this guy in Hawaii right now? What's going on?
It's crazy.
You just got to smile, man. I jumped up.
Unreal.
You didn't jump up at the end. Come on, man.
Crazy. It's mind blowing.
I hated to see Gaethje get knocked out, but he was already losing the fight.
But that's what I was going to say next. This is how crazy this is. Everybody celebrated this moment so much because it was fucking mind-blowing. Me, you, we've been doing this for years. Matt, I mean, years and years. And I couldn't believe it. Just, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, right? But what's so crazy is Justin Gaethje is so beloved.
Yeah.
And such a loved fighter. And people have even overlooked that, right? That the pain of watching Justin Gaethje fall because the moment was executed. Historically, I mean, Max Holloway put a stamp on his career in a way that was bigger than a title fight. I mean, the way that he, even though it was a title, I mean, that was like an undisputed title and a BMF title and just a crazy moment in, you know, UFC history. And for him to risk it all, to call Gaethje in after being clearly up and having a master performance, and his coach, who never gets any credit, he's got a great team. His coach kept telling him at the end of every round, clean 30 seconds, if you remember. Clean 30 seconds, Max. Clean 30 seconds. They didn't want Max brawling because they knew he was so ahead. For him to call Justin in and point it down and then to land the shot as time expires, I mean, what, Matt, have you ever seen something like this in all these years of watching MMA? I've never seen something that incredible.
We've seen him do this before with Ricardo Lamos. He did the same exact thing, right. and it was they were throwing, but the way it ended with you couldn't script it better. 1 second left, how do you script it better? You couldn't.
Crazy, no. But it's a movie. That'll be a movie for sure.
It was Gaethje, and the fact that it was Justin Gaethje, he did that too. Yeah. No disrespect to the other guys, but the fact that it was Justin Gaethje who knew he had to knock Max out, and he was willing to stand there and trade with him. It really was fucking batshit crazy that he did that.
That was so entertaining. It was so entertaining for everybody that you almost feel like you said, like those guys really left so much out there. And Gaethje too, man. I love that guy. He's such a good dude. He's got such a big heart. If people knew these guys and knew what kind of people they are and what kind of human beings they are, what kind of teammates they are and how loyal they are and how good they are to their families, and it'd be harder for people to watch. So Justin Gaethje, you know, nothing but love and respect to him, and nothing but love and respect to Max Holloway. An incredible moment in history of the UFC.
I have to give credit to Justin where, now you could have you have a 5-round fight. The end of that first round, but really when he knew that he was in for a night that's going to be, and he loves it in there, but I'm sure he knew he was in for a rough night the second when he did that spinning back kick and he caught him on the nose. and he busted that nose, and he's feeling it to see if it's even. And yeah, I think he said, like, it's done. Like, I can't even breathe. Like, he's like, it was like, now you know, you start, now you know you have another 20 minutes to fight with one of the most skilled pugilists in the in the sport. And so you've got no nose. You're affecting your breathing. It's just, I mean, you've seen him go back to the stool, not as happy as usual, more like, all right, guys, is my nose still there?
I mean, you saw that line, right? You saw that the nose had been been cut right here, right? So we know that the nose, he was probably feeling it here, and he was like, is my nose coming off, you know? And, you know, I've seen guys' ears comes off. I've seen crazy shit, and you have too, you know? And for him to have something to affect his breathing, that's the thing. If it's aesthetic and you can keep going, that affected his performance so much because he couldn't breathe. He couldn't have that regular cadence that you would want to have for a 5-round fight against Max Holloway. I mean, you're right. And they said a lesser man would have taken that route out of there. They would have been done.
Yeah. I have a question for you too. When a guy gets knocked out like that, is it mandatory that they get an MRI?
Oh, you know, Dr. Davidson is the head doc, and you know, Matt knows him. He's incredible. He does the Raider stuff too. He's such a smart guy. Every single time there's, you know, any type of significant damage, even guys don't get knocked out, he sends them to CT. And he says the same thing, because it takes forever at the hospital. Matt knows these stories. You go there and you're going to be there 5 hours. But he says, man, I don't want to waste time. I don't care. And, you know, I guarantee they send him to get a CT. The UFC is really good about that, and just kind of see where he's at. And, you know, it's not the first time he's been knocked out. I mean, you saw him, he came to relatively quickly, and he's just going to have to take some time off. Obviously it was a bit devastating knockout.
My question, when you say a CT, like, do you mean, did they have to go into the MRI machine or a CAT scan that they don't have to lay in that tube?
It's a CT scan, right? They do imaging on the brain and make sure that there's no swelling.
Are you in a tube though? Like, are you in that? Cause I'm claustrophobic and
no,
I can never.
No. They just do the top half right here from here. Right. And they don't put the whole body in. And now they've got partial MRI tubes that you lay in that only have part that covers. So that way, if you're claustrophobic, you can. I've gotten a lot of MRIs, man. I got a lot of experience, unfortunately. Matt probably does too.
Where they fucking, I was in the last one. I just go to make sure that I'm okay. And my head is in there, and I'm like, can you put some music on? Because I was having a panic attack. And he goes, what do you want? I said, rock, just some rock. And this idiot thought I said Rocky. So he's playing the fucking Rocky theme over and over again in my ear. It was miserable. Yeah, it was rough. But I'm glad they have the other ones that they can use too. One of those I might go be able to do.
But man, I was gonna say Renato Moicano though. Man, what a night for jiu-jitsu, man! What beautiful. I mean, guys that are losing, they're winning. Jiu-jitsu turned the table. Diego Lopez. I mean,
incredible.
Zeke's no fucking cream puff.
That kid. You know, we did camp in Mexico and we stayed at his gym. And I spent probably about, you know, I was there for a month going down, coming back every week. And, you know, this kid has his own gym, right? He's 28 years old. He's got a whole bunch of students down there that he's building. And he's their head coach, right? He's got fighters that he goes and he corners. He goes and travels everywhere. This kid is incredible. He has a will and a spirit. He believes in himself in a way and that's how you make those runs, man. Sadiq is a tough guy. And Diego Lopez isn't without flaws, you know, but his mental game is so strong. He's going to be a force, man. And I think that it shows that when you have that confidence, like, and then he walks over to Dana and he, you know, hey, I'm going to jump the fence. And I mean, he's just so dialed in and visualizing. You could see it, you know, you could see it.
And what do you guys did when Jamal Hill, and again, I don't, he's obviously ready to fight, but am I reading into something that wasn't there? Right before the fight, they do the thing where they either fist bump or they don't. And there was a weird thing he did where he kind of raised his hand hesitant to see if Alex wanted to. And it just struck me as uncomfortable. And again, I could just be reading into something that's not there at all. You guys understand the psychology of a fighter.
Actually, I remember that. Actually, I think probably because he didn't know if Alex was going to fist bump him, but this goes back to what Alex says and many people say. You can talk all kinds of shit, but when you got to go face to face, that's when those, all those emotions go away. I thought Jamahal Hill was pretty respectful all week. I thought he's a really smart guy. You know, people paint him with a different brush. You know, I did a breakdown on him. I've seen the guy fights really intelligently. He was trying to create angles, but Pereira has got different power that we've never seen. And that left hook, I mean, you know, all the way back to his kickboxing days, he's been knocking people out for, you know, since the very beginning of his fighting career with it. That's obviously special. I mean, you know, he got 190,000 on the freaking hitbox at the PI. I mean, and every tough guy in the world's hit that thing, right? I mean, whenever you're there, you see guys hitting it, Matt knows. And I mean, this guy's at the highest score by a lot. So
he beat Ngannou, right?
Yeah, by like 40,000 points. And I mean, look, for Jamahal Hill, like he said, I think he texted, "I dared to be great." And he did. And, you know, the guy has been an undisputed champion. Yep. He's fought the best guys. I mean, it's not easy out there, man. It's a game of inches. Pereira made a statement, unbelievably impressive. And this guy's a legend already. I mean, you know, he's won two belts in two divisions, and now he has defended once again a former champion who had not lost.
I'll tell you what he did that was him wave. Well, I don't remember if it was Herb Dean or who it was. When he gets kicked in the nuts and the Zen hand that went up and stopped him from coming in. I mean, that was, I've never seen a fighter handle a referee like that. I've seen guys wave it off.
But it shows you he was so locked into tracking Jamahal Hill. And Pereira likes to get to the angle towards the left hook. And Jamahal Hill standing southpaw. So once he missed the left hand, which you see Pereira just gets out of the way of the left hand and connects, because he had his lead hand and Jamahal being southpaw, he attacked that flank, right? And he made that angle outside that lead foot. And he was working on that. So when Herb stepped in, he was like, "Not right now, dude. It's my time to go." And he said that. "I was making my reads," and he knew he was ready to go, which is even scarier, that he felt that he was ready to connect and then connected right after that moment.
And let me just point out to the haters out there of Jamahal Hill, you know, Alex Pereira, a special talent, did the same thing to Sean Strickland.
Sure, people never been knocked out.
Sean Strickland, Adesanya's going to kill him. Look what he did to him. He's too, that style, the rolling shit don't work. And then what he did in that fight with Adesanya, with his style, not even changing his style, not switching up, saying, "Now I'm going to try to out-grapple this guy." And look what Strickland did. Everybody knows Sean Strickland.
100%.
I feel Jamahal Hill's best days are ahead of him. Right now
is the
darkest time for him. And just keep going forward, buddy. And
Fucking out there. I don't fucking understand. Why? What is wrong with people? Why did they do this to MMA fighters? I mean, the comments, the shit talk. I bet you this guy's got fucking messages in his inbox. I mean, blah, blah. It's like, dude, what possesses you to sit at home and want to inflict that little message to someone? It's so devilish, man. They should line these people up and smack them in the fucking face. I mean, you see the guys reacting, right? He says in his tweet, "I dared to be great, guys." He's trying to even word it because he knows what the incoming hate.
Sure.
It's just weird, man. Why can't we just celebrate these fucking guys, right? I mean, Oliveira celebrated. Sometimes guys get celebrated. Oliveira celebrated no matter what. Wins. People love that guy, right? I mean, just celebrate the guy. I mean, I don't know why we fans do this. And I just felt like after such an amazing event, we should all just be fucking happy that we have this amazing sport. We all love it, man. Be positive. Don't be negative.
It's part of it is personality driven. If the fighter, whoever the fighter is, has a personality that of some guys are just going to be happy to see you lose. And in a way, even though it's annoying to see some jerk off insulting Jamahal Hill, it goes to say the level of caring that people have about the sport is they are now looking at it the way people look at the NFL or the way they react to Major League Baseball. Like, there is such investment in these fucking fighters that they're like, "Fuck you." Like, it's crazy.
You're not running down the field with your fucking Vikings helmet on and then you're 100%. Part of the team. Like, you're going out there in your fucking shorts.
Sure.
Right? And you're willing it all. You're trying to fucking be great. And when you fall flat on your face, man, like, You know, it's respect. And when I fought, it used to just be different. You know, people were like, man, he's a cage fighter. You're fucking crazy. They didn't ask you a record. Guys that had bad records that were losers, people respected him and treated him well. I mean, it's just, I don't get it. It's like, man, the dude's out there fucking putting it on the line in against the scariest motherfucking dude in the world, right? Like, you know, and he's willing and trying his best. And all right, he got fucking lost, okay? Like, it's sick. The shit that people write, it's fucking sick. And I think that as a culture, as an MMA culture, we need to uphold and support our guys no matter what. All the coaches, all the teams, all the fighters, we see that. Once the beef is over, man, shake hands, you know, keep it classy. Unless somebody's talking about fucking families and they're going to hurt each other in a somewhere outside of the octagon, Shit's just unnecessary. So I remember how I got treated, you know, in 2007. And I know things have changed and, you know, the sport was fringy back then, but these guys are fighting two battles, right? They're fighting the battle of public opinion. They're fighting and then they're trying to get sponsors and stay relevant. And then the UFC is not going to book them if they're not relevant. So there's a lot of shit going on. And then you got to beat Alex Pereira. So, man, fucking, you know, put a heart on the guy's post and leave him the fuck alone, dude. Let him do his thing. Let him recover. So maybe I see it this way because I'm on the inside of it and I see how much work these fucking kids put in. But
they're jerk-offs. Really, they're jerk-offs who say things to a fighter that they would never say to the guy's face. Just saying, you're fucking suck. Or just saying that to a guy who went in there.
But what does that do for you? Like, you're being negative. You yourself are being negative. You yourself are fucking not being positive for yourself. You're not doing anything positive with your time, nothing. So it's bad all the way around. And I mean, I get it. Oh, there'll always be trolls. Well, yeah, but you got to speak out on that. And you know what? Everybody can do better. We can do better. They can do better. So I just think we got to keep it positive. When a guy risks it all to be great, fucking recognize that, man. Salute to the guy. I feel sorry for him, you know, and respect. And hey, go get him next time.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And maybe our producer could do this for me and look up when exactly the quote came out of with Theodore
Roosevelt. Roosevelt, the man in the arena.
The man in the arena. Now, my point is this. The hate has always been there. You have to see where it comes from. But the point is, nowadays, it's just in your face more because of social media. Ray Longo used to always say, you know, when you hear that shit, it's like back in the day, a guy comes back from the Olympics. He visits the town pub. Oh, what's the matter? You just got a silver? Some fat ass who's eating shots and drinking up here. Well, you couldn't get the gold? So, I mean, it's exactly the same thing, but on a broader scale because everybody's got a voice. And when you track it down, it's not going to be people like anybody here because everything you're saying is total. It's basically, it's human decency. But
it's
just like that fat guy on a stool telling the Olympian, all right, why'd you only get a silver? You know what I mean? So it's the same exact thing.
You're so lucky to be with Ray Longo. I always get to see Ray Longo on the bus, right? And I saw him not long ago. And I get to sit with him and talk to him. And it was Marab, I think, when Marab fought. This guy's fucking hair looks so good. And I always tell him, I said, Ray, your hair is so fucking beautiful. Right? And he says, you know, hey, I don't know. And we always talk about things. Ray is just one of those guys you just love to listen to him talk, right? I mean, he makes you smile, and he's full of wisdom. He's full of stories, I love that guy. He's a great guy.
You know what part of the fact that there's so many assholes or whatever? It's like the price of success. Like, you ever see Catch Me If You Can with DiCaprio where he plays the airline pilot? He's faking being a pilot. But in the 60s, people would ask airline pilots for autographs. Oh my God. And now there's so many, our airline industry is so amazing. No one gives a shit. It's kind of the same thing where there's so many.
Still, fighting in your fucking underwear, though. You're going in front of the whole world.
Yeah.
And fighting in your fucking board shorts. I mean, there's nothing that is scarier than that, you know? And I'm telling you, and before a fight, and Matt knows this, you think about every bad thing that can happen and you've got to control your mind, right? You think about, you know, you got 7 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever, 9 weeks.
Right.
And every single, you know, night you're putting your head down, you're thinking about the guy that you're fighting. You know that it's coming. You know the date, you know the time, you know where it's going to happen. So there's so much stress on you and you've got to mitigate, handle all that and still try to be courageous. So I think when you do it and you understand how hard it is, and again, whenever someone dares to be great, I always celebrate victories with people I have no idea who they are. And I always, you know, look at someone who loses and have respect, whether you like them, whether you hate them.
Yeah.
They still put it on the line. So I don't know where we lost that, but I'd love to see it come back.
The only good side of that is that there's also so much more love for these guys too. Like, you know what I mean? Like there's so many people that do recognize what you're saying. Like the assholes are going to be vocal, but there's so many more people that are like, hey, this guy just went in and fucking fought Alex Pajeda and he was a champion himself. So I would say 100%. There's a lot more people, hopefully, that recognize that.
I mean,
for sure.
Of positivity and love.
I know what you're going to mention.
Let's go. I'm waiting, Matt.
Now my ADD is kicking in. I know what I'm going to mention, but what are you going to mention?
I think you were going to mention how well you picked the fights.
I wasn't. First of all,
fucking killing me.
I was getting cocky up until the main event, and then you know now people are shitting on me. But I want to say, Max Holloway, there's guys that are not good winners, and there's guys that are good.
Yeah.
He's probably the best winner. If you're fighting, there's things to worry about, but you don't have to worry about him stepping on your neck or when you're down. You 100%. Know what I mean? That guy, from when he fought Brian Ortega to everybody who he's fought, he's just a sweet, nice, cool dude. Hey man, like with Brian Ortega, he's like, you know what? We should be friends. He's just like a nice guy. Well, Justin, he couldn't have been. He's having everybody clap for him. He's just such
so
a
true.
classy
you know, guy. Here's a peel back the curtain on Max. When Jeff fought, I don't remember in Edmonton. I think he was fighting Nico Price. We were the co-main and Max was the main, and we were in the back with Max the whole time. Right, we're the last guys out. Right, the whole locker room was cleared out. He went up to every single inspector. Shook their hand, talked to them, all the cut guys, everybody in the UFC staff. I've never seen somebody, and he was a champion at this time.
Yeah.
I've never seen somebody treat people better than Max Holloway. He brings his mom to the weigh-ins on the bus. Everybody's with their team. He's sitting there with his mom, talking to his mom, has his son with him. This guy is so centered on who he is and what he's about. And I mean, it's even behind the scenes is even better how nice he is to people who nobody even says hi to. So man, good things happen to good people. And I think that's you nailed it. He upheld Justin. Right. And he always does that. He's a real warrior. And that's exactly what mixed martial arts really is about.
What do you think happens now for Max? Where do you think he fight? Who do you think he fights next? And what do you, I mean, he has two divisions to pick from and he looked so good at that weight. Like he looked really unbelievable. Some guys go up and, they go down, they don't look as good, but Max looked, I mean, better than I've ever seen him.
Yeah, he looked really big. Like he didn't look small. He didn't look skinny. Hey, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm going to say what I think he should, what he should do.
You heard Ilya talking about, you know, Max already saying Max is next, you know, Max is the guy. Ilya did come out and say it. And it's funny, everybody's talking about how Ilya's reactions were and shit. Oh, he looks scared. And, you know, like, well, the guy fought Volkanovski, who, you know, fought Max too. So, like, let's relax on the scared stuff.
Three times.
And Ilya, I think Ilya's trying to jump to these big, huge fights and do all this stuff. And you know, that's kind of dangerous, right? When you start calling guys out outside your division, right? When you win the title. But Max is such a big name and a featherweight great. Maybe some still say the GOAT. Alex may be the GOAT. Obviously, that's a different argument. That this is such a huge fight. It just makes sense. You know, I don't think, you know, now Dustin's fighting Islam anyway, right? We know that. And for Max, I don't think Max and Islam, that Islam can fight 170, right? Max can't fight 170. Max can fight 55, but Topuria is the fight, and I think it makes sense.
I agree 110%. Yes, that's what he wants. And Max, you know, that's what Max wants. And that on paper, that's exciting as hell.
Oh, so exciting.
Let's go, man. And, you know, you could point to the Volkanovski fights. Oh, well, he beat him. That second fight is always in question. I was there long.
Yeah,
close. Very close. That fight.
But again, it's, you know, what have you done for me lately? What have you shown me
lately? That's it.
Let's talk about all. You're only as good as your last fight. If you're only as good as your last fight, then Max Holloway is fucking great. And let's fight versus the best in the world. Let's go.
That's the truth. That's it.
Who's not going to get bigger?
Doesn't get bigger than what he did Saturday. There has been no moment in the UFC that big. They're all up there. You got Conor and Jose Aldo, right? Yeah. You got some of those moments. But I think that the BMF title, the whole way it happened, UFC 300, the visibility of the sport, obviously. Now in 2024, the base and the visibility, that was crazy, man.
100%.
And O'Malley, it's funny you mentioned jumping around different divisions. O'Malley had called out Topuria, who I think said, no, you got to deal with Marab first. And I think that, you know, O'Malley is a great, great fighter, great striker. But I think that everybody would like to avoid Marab if they can.
For sure. I mean, Marab's tenacious and, you know, but I think even O'Malley now has said, well, hey, Marab looks like he's next, you know. And look, these guys work so hard to get the title. And, you know, man, there's so many fights you don't want to fight. You know, when me and Brandon beat Figueiredo and he's, I want to fight again. I want to fight Pantoja. I want it in my head. I think, oh, man, it's just murderer's row, you know, like, and you lose this much to Pantoja in that close of a fight, you know, and then you see now Pantoja's dominating, like championship level fights and the highest level fights are so hard no matter what. And yeah, okay, O'Malley did good against Cheeto, whatever, he got that one back, but that doesn't mean anything. Like every single fight he fights at this level is going to be so hard against guys that are number one, number two, number three ranked. And, you know, I think these guys, what they try to do is they try to pick the fights and they try to stay champion as long as they can. And I look at Leon, you know, I mean, come on, man. Like this guy fights once or twice a year. But in Leon's defense, he waited 8 or 9 years to get the title. And so, you know, in his head, he thought, once I get the belt, I'm not fighting a lot, you know. And as long as they go out there and dominate, which he did in his last fight, and O'Malley did in his last fight, they're in the driver's seat. And I think that's why, you know, you saw the UFC went right to Armand and asked him if he wanted to fight for the title. The UFC's job as a company is to keep the fights going. And the fighters have got to try to land in that window and win that title and land on the runway. Once they get the title, everything changes, right? And you saw Aljo. When he wasn't on his timeline and he saw what happened, and it's part of the sport, right? Trying to manage it all.
And speaking of Aljo, can I just mention, I wanted to mention it before is, you know, when you're seeing somebody come back after a loss, you know, you want to see how they react. Now he got caught because he got a little over aggressive with Sean Malley. He wanted to entertain the crowd. I'm going to throw my way at, you know, it didn't happen the first round when he was being patient.
No.
It shows the growth, the fight IQ getting up there where it's like, all right, now you got Calvin Kattar. He's up, dude. That guy's slept people on the feet.
He's very good. He's very good.
He didn't make you shown, all right, hey, man, if I do it again, shame on me. He didn't do it again. He was smart. No. All his entries were just.
Matt.
Study that.
Think about this, right? People always talk shit, you know, that gamble and, you know, what the fuck, man, $300. You fucking retard. This guy's got two checks on the line. You know what I mean? He's got one, he's got his win money and he's got his show money. You think he's going to get crazy and try to entertain people and be nuts? Like these guys are trying to win. Now, whether it was boring, whether it wasn't, that's a different argument. As far as efficiency, as far as effort, and as far as execution goes, he gets a 98, right? So, I mean, I know you're his coach. I know you're proud of him, and you should be proud of him. He did what he was supposed to do, and that's it. So there are two different things entertaining the fans. And, again, it's just a different thing that we're talking about. And I just wish people could compartmentalize a little bit better and understand the business aspect, understand the fighter has his job, the UFC's job is to entertain. So we understand why the UFC wants guys like Pereira and O'Malley. We can't blame the UFC. They're trying to produce a product that people want. We can't blame the fighter. If he's playing it safe, he'll get penalized maybe with the UFC, maybe not. But he's trying to win at that time two checks, right? Yeah. So it is what it is. You know, you don't got to point blame and blame everyone else. Sometimes the game is what it is, and everybody's playing their game, and that's it.
And it's also, too, it does seem like it's almost like the guys who are vocal get this. I mean, again, the UFC is a business, and part of it is, what will fans pay to see? Will they pay to see this? Will they pay to see that? And that's why a guy like Leon had to wait, because he's a quiet kind of a gentleman. Yeah. Or a guy like Merab, who, even if it wasn't for Aljo, he's just a nice guy and he's quiet. Now that people are getting to know him a little bit more, I think there's more of like a casual fan thing to see him fight for the belt. But part of it is, the loudest guys get the fights first.
Yeah, look at Colby. You know, yeah. I mean, Colby made a whole run out of it. Colby avoids every hard fight. Colby does all that stuff, and people talk about him. But these athletes are smart, man. Give the guy credit that he's still in the game at 35 right. or 36 and minimizing his risk. All these guys had to fight tons of hard fights to get in the rankings and get to that level. And now they're just trying to capitalize on it. So it's like everybody's taking it personally. That's not affecting their checkbook, or it's affecting your $200 bet. Nobody cares about your bet, dude. These guys are trying to make their way through this business. And, you know, we just need to have some intelligent conversations with it. And that's the reality of it. So even the guys like Leon, you know, we've got guys that we want, you know, to fight him. Bilal wants to fight him. All these guys want to fight him. We know why Leon's doing what he's doing. He's trying to maximize his position. And then you got guys like Brandon Moreno, guys like Israel Adesanya, that are said, hey, I don't care. I want to fight every, you know, 4 to 5 months. And look at Izzy. He made an incredible run. Brandon had an incredible run. And these guys, they're fighters. Like, they want to fight a lot. But even after Izzy's last loss, what did he have to do? He had to step back. He just didn't seem like he really wanted to be there in that fight. You know, like, these guys can't keep going at this level. The guys that fight a lot, those champions, they need to be recognized. Same as Volk. The fact that these guys are putting it on the line at that level over and over again for name value and for all the fans is incredible. And those guys deserve a lot of credit, man. Same with Gaethje against Holloway. There's Gaethje right at the title shot. All he had to do was not fight that fight.
That's right. And the example I've used a lot with that, or we've both used, is it cost Frankie Edgar, because he fought Ortega when he didn't have to fight. I think he was next in line for Max, if I remember correctly. And then he took the Ortega fight and lost it. And Ortega went on to you know, it's like it cost him the fight. So sometimes these guys take that chance and it does hurt them.
Yeah, and other times they take it, and it's a big win. So sure. Look, man, it's all about fucking the nuts.
The video's fresh in my head. The knockout, the bell. I mean, Sarah, they had about 5 to 6 Sarah clips in that whole thing. But I mean, they had the ground and pound shot. I mean, you had to feel good, because I was watching it, looking at the moments, and I was like, look at our guy. He's well represented, baby.
I keep it in perspective. Like, some guys, they show up, they go, look at that dominant champion. And then they go, oh, look at that little guy who made fucking everybody thought he was going to get his ass kicked, and he did good. So I take it in perspective, but I do, you know, I do point it out to my kids and go, oh, look, daddy. Anyway,
I would.
Guys, I can't say enough about UFC 300. I thought it was amazing.
Amazing.
Incredible. We could talk about it for another hour. Jimmy, I know you got to get out of here safe. We have such a good time. Let's promote some shit.
Yeah, what do you want to promote, Safe? We always love when you come on.
I've got nothing to promote. School is full. Everything is good. I just like talking to my guys and chopping it up. I really do want to say that, you know, man, there's times I don't watch a fight. There's times I go to the ranch and fucking shoot guns and you know, I'm like, man, I don't want to see MMA. Yeah. I was so unbelievably impressed with UFC 300. Saturday night, Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, these guys, these matchmakers, right, that put these fights together, these guys that nobody knows really. I mean, they, you know, they say their name on Twitter, but no one understands that these guys are fucking delivering every single week. And that fight, those fights were unreal. And as a guy who's, you know, a fan of the sport and has been in the sport, you know, since 2005, like, I have never in my life have I seen something so well done, so big. And they just hit a grand slam, man. And we should all be happy The fans should be happy. Like, fucking stop the hate and all the negative talk and all this, that, this. Like, just everyone needs to celebrate this moment. Everybody, that the sport has reached this place and had such an incredible showing for the whole world. So it's just nothing but positivity for what UFC 300 was about and just an amazing event. And if that's a sign of things to come, man, fuck, who cares? I mean, what's next?
I'm with you, brother.
It's great. Great having you again. And Matt, I guess I will talk to you Wednesday. I have nothing to promote. Do you want to come see me? I'm going to be in Indianapolis in 2 weeks, Bloomington, Illinois. And whoever wants to come see me, that's where I'll be.
Guys,
my man, if you need anything in Indy, let me know.
Are you know people out there? Or are you close there?
I went to law school there, so I know Indianapolis well.
Oh, next time you're on, let's talk about what kind of law before you go.
Oh God, I was never a lawyer. Give me some credit. I fucking just went to school, but I never ever became an attorney.
Okay.
No, I left after 2 years, and then I became a fighter. So that was a hard conversation with my parents, but it worked out pretty well.
Awesome.
Shit, man. See that? Hey, guys. So much fun, man. I'm going to talk to you in a couple of days. Jimmy, safe. Hope to see you soon, bro.
All right, buddy. Take care. Later, safe.
Play it again. Thank you, times.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.